Tonight, the Bullock Performance Institute series at Western Michigan University continues with a solo recital, and the featured artist is Øystein Botsvik, who is my guest here this morning on WMUK. It's very nice to meet a tuba soloist. It doesn't happen very often in my day. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Mr. Botsvik, tell me, you are a solo tubist, and that means in your career, you have not accepted an orchestral position, which is one of the few ways I would think a tubist can make a living, but you've made it as a concert artist. And that was an intentional choice, I assume?
The road was made as I went, so to speak. And if you look at it historically, all these instruments that are used as a solo instrument now, like piano, violin, all of these, at some point were orchestral instruments as well. And somebody broke out from that long time ago, and then now it's very common to have violin and piano soloists. And I think that since the tuba is a fairly young instrument, invented 12th of September, 1835, it have the same possibility of growing into like acknowledged solo instrument as the others. It more or less depends on the players, what they want to do with this piece of metal.
Some of the other instruments in the orchestra were also employed in folk and popular styles of music, too. And brass, I suppose, has that tradition as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the tuba has been used in jazz, for example. Back in the days where they played on the streets down in New Orleans, for example, they needed to sound loud, and the double bass didn't do it.
No.
It wasn't loud enough. So they used tubas in those bands, and that's one of the uses. Now, if you look at the most recent development, you have the combined Mexican-American music.
Wow, that's some phenomenal tuba.
Oh,
playing.
Yes. I mean, the tuba players or sousaphone players, they were superstars on those events down in the south of the country. And the sousaphones are decorated. And according to research, there won't be a party without the tuba these days with these bands. So tuba is absolutely a necessity. And of course, you can use it in heavy metal. I've played some punk music with the tuba. I played in hip-hop bands. I played different types of jazz orchestras myself, and also, of course, then classical, which is my main thing.
I know that you found some significant teachers here in the United States when you were old enough, but tell me where you grew up and what your early experiences as a musician were.
Yeah, in Norway, we have a lot of wind bands. For example, the little town I live in, which has about 150,000 people, have more than 50 wind orchestras. And, well, that's pretty much as Texas. Well, not that I know exactly.
No,
yeah, so it's very dense. It's very dense with wind music. And they think that in Norway, in general, there are 6,000 tuba players. So it's incredibly large numbers on a very small population. So it was always music around me when I grew up, and wind band was a big thing. My mother used to play trumpet in the wind orchestra. My grandfather played the tuba as an amateur tubist. None of them were professionals, though. So when I wanted to start in the local wind band, tuba was actually the only available instrument. So for me, it was tuba or nothing. And I learned to like it a lot over the years.
Who were some of your first teachers, the band leaders?
Yes, I had a very, very good teacher called Eivind Riise, that was a tuba enthusiast of first degree. He was really someone that revealed the magical world of tuba to me, which was at that time very unknown to most people.
Yeah.
And for example, did you know that there is a international tuba association? Back then it was called TUBA, Tubists Universal Brotherhood Association. And now they're calling it ITEA, which means International Tuba Euphonium Association.
Yeah.
But it's been working ever since it started to promote tuba amongst the general audience and to promote better playing amongst those who do play and to promote different ways of playing and spread sheet music and all of this. So yeah, it's been quite a bit of development.
You mentioned how players of orchestral instruments like the violin was a standard ensemble instrument until some special people came along and turned it into a solo concert instrument. I'm wondering who did that for tuba?
Several people, but some of the most important were actually Americans. You have Harvey Phillips, who is the grandfather of tuba in this country. He made several great recordings, which I used to listen to, Alec Wilder's music, for example. And then you have Roger Bobo, who took it over from there and also has been doing a lot of great recordings and like pioneered. Then you have Michael Lind in Sweden, who was the one who took it even further in the 70s and 80s. And then you have John Fletcher in England, and all of these have really done their part of pushing it forward. Mm-hmm. Now I'm trying to do my part, and it's kind of a relay. You sort of do what you can and then give the stick to the next generation.
You mentioned Harvey Phillips, yeah. And you knew him personally. You were
Yes, I studied student. For him as well.
Yeah. When was that?
That was in 1994. I remember because the Olympics were in Norway at that time. And instead of watching the Olympics in Norway, I was studying for him in Indiana in the U.S.
One way that we the audience can see the ways in which you have championed the instrument is through you've documented it. You've made recordings both with orchestra and as soloist.
Yeah.
I have some questions about recording the tuba. Has it been actually difficult to capture the sound you hear in when you're playing on record?
I think you could say that it's always going to be different because it's an artificial medium. It tries to recreate, you know, high fidelity. But it's never going to be exactly the way you hear it. And maybe especially with the tuba, because there's so many low frequencies that are really hard to capture in a good way on a recording.
Yeah.
But it is possible to get fairly close and you get used to it. It's like, yeah, it's not the way I hear it, but that's okay because it works anyway.
Well, listeners, you're going to hear some recordings of my guest, Øystein Båtsvik, on WMUK. But if you want to hear the real resonances, you'll need to be in attendance tonight. Music begins at 7:30 p.m., although if you arrive a little early at 7 o'clock, there's a chance to get to know the performer a little bit better in an onstage preview of the concert. Again, that's tonight at 7:30. It's a ticketed event, and details are at milleroditorium.com. That's the box office. You can also get tickets at the door. The program, we'll be looking at many of these pieces, some of which were written by my guests. So, however, the first piece we're going to listen to is by a famous composer, Edvard Grieg. This was recorded, I think, on a debut disc for you.
Right? Actually, this is the second one.
Your second one.
Yeah, but it's the first, the debut disc on the BIS record label.
Mm-hmm. A wonderful label.
Yeah, it's really, really good quality recordings from them.
Okay, well, let's listen to Anitra's Dance from Edvard Grieg's Peer Gynt.
Peer Gynt suite, that's right.
Anitra's Dance from Peer Gynt by Edvard Grieg. And my guest here is one of the foremost tuba soloists working today, Øystein Båtsvik. And we should talk a little bit about how this recording got made. During the music, you mentioned that it was an uphill battle to actually have a solo recording made.
Yeah, it was. I had made a CD with more contemporary music before that, but that was almost 10 years before this. And I felt that this, now I really need to get out and do something more accessible, you know, like with some transcriptions like this and also original music that is easier to listen to. So I approached Mr. Robert von Bahr, owner of the BIS CD company. And his initial response was, no, tuba is not going to sell, especially a transcription CD like this. And then I said, well, isn't there any chance, you know, I worked on him for months there in order to make him sort of soften up a little bit. And eventually, more or less to get rid of me, he said, well, if we do it with an orchestra, and if we, if you pay for the engineer, you pay for the orchestra, you pay for the conductor, you pay for the hall, you pay for the travels, you pay for the hotel, everything, then we might consider it. So, and I said, yes, I took that as a yes, you know, really optimistic. And I got some funding. I put a lot of money in myself. And we made the recording with Musica Vita from Sweden, the orchestra, Bjørn Sagstad, a very good conductor from Norway. And Dirk Lydemann, who was the engineer, I paid for his travels as well up from Germany. And he is one of those great tone meisters, you know, what really knows how to make a good recording. Now, when the result was finished and the master was sent to BIS, they were, the tune changed 100%. They sort of turned around 180 degrees and said, this is the best CD we've ever released on BIS the last 2-3 years, said. And they released like 10 a month. All right. And by the way, would you like to sign up for an unlimited number of CDs where we pay for everything? You can record whatever you like. You know, what a turn. What a turn. And sure enough, it turned out that this CD that you just heard Anitra stands from, it sold 1,600 copies in 6 days. So the whole first print was out in 6 days. This is more than they've ever sold in a long time on BIS, and they reprinted it, and now it's become a bestseller. So it's really, really
And it's far beyond those who are brass players who want to have an aspirational recording to listen to. It's for anyone who wants to hear lyrical, beautiful music.
Yes, and that is the point here. For example, this CD was admitted as part of the, I think there's a CD club in America called American Musical Heritage or something like this. And you get CDs sent in your in the mail, and that's just general music lovers that that buy these CDs. And that's part of the point here. I'm not trying to reach only the brass lovers, but people who love music.
On a related note, do you travel with copies of your recordings?
Not anymore. I used to do that in the past, but these days people don't buy physical CDs anymore, especially in the US and some other countries. In Germany, they still do. In China, they do. And in Asia, they do. So there I bring CDs, but not in most Western countries.
You mentioned being away from home maybe 200 days out of the year because you're a traveling concert artist. You mentioned just now a few places. What does your travel concert schedule look like? Can you give us a glimpse as to maybe where you've been in the last few months?
Yeah. Now, for example, last summer, I was between May and end of September, I was home for about 10 days in total. And that included visiting more than 12 different countries. And I was a large chunk in China. I was in Japan. I was in Canada, in the U.S., twice in the US, I think, also in Germany, England, Sweden, Greece, did a concert in Greece. So just on the top of my brain here, it's all over the place.
Now that you've been doing it, though, for many years, do you generally have friends already lined up in places you're heading to?
Yeah, it's. I know a lot of people.
Yeah,
and I've got colleagues and I've got friends all over the place, and not people that I hang out with each day as normal co-workers have. You know, if you work at a normal place. But it feels like it was yesterday. When I meet my good friend Dennis Askew, for example, from North Carolina, it could have been 3 years since last time, but it feels like it was yesterday. So yeah, it's kind of neat to be able to travel and meet great people everywhere. And that is something that I really want to emphasize. If you look in the media news, for example, you get a feeling that the world is a really scary and dangerous place, mm-hmm. and you should be aware of people from other places and all of that. But my experience is that the bad people are really far between, and that most of the time when I travel, I just meet a lot of, you know, hospitality and warmness.
Yes, and a lot of, I'm sure, the question I really wanted to ask first was one I imagine you answer a lot, about traveling with the instrument, which that must be a hassle at times.
Yes, actually, once I was traveling from Frankfurt to Linz in Austria to do a concert the same evening. I sat in my plane. I looked out the window. We hadn't taken off yet. We were on the tarmac, and outside of the window is my tuba standing on the tarmac. So I called the flight attendant and said, look, my tuba is outside. It's supposed to be inside because I'm doing a concert this evening. And she said, oh, don't worry. It's probably not your tuba. And I'm sure it's my tuba. I know my tuba when I see it. Okay, so she went forward to the steward, and they were talking, discussing. It turned out the plane was totally full. So there was no way they could fit it. And, you know, after a lengthy discussion there, I was more and more desperate because of the concert. The door to the cockpit opened and one of the pilots came out and said, what's the big deal? And I explained the situation. I don't know if he was an amateur tuba player or just a general music lover, but he made a phone call to the security department of the airline. And he got permission to put the tuba inside the cockpit.
To overload the plane.
So I went out on the tarmac, got the tuba, put it in the cockpit, and everything went fine.
Oh, that's incredible.
But yeah, there are times where tuba could be a hassle.
By the way, do you play on more than one instrument in the course of a concert?
Never. I only use one tuba. I sometimes use a mute in it, and I sometimes use some special effects, but never change the instrument. It's simply too much to carry around.
The concert is tonight at 7:30 p.m. It's part of the live and interactive series presented by the Bullock Performance Institute. Tickets available at the door or ahead of time by calling 387-2300 or visiting the website milleraudatorium.com. And Mr. Vodzvik, I need to ask you about your composing career as well, because we are about to listen to a piece that you wrote yourself.
Right. I've never seen myself as a composer, really, but I've always composed. And I haven't really received any formal education in composing. I've had some writing classes on more general rules about how to make a four-part choir arrangement, for example, stuff like this. But I've studied what others have done, learned from the good part and the bad parts. And I've picked up after, I have played in an orchestra for 2 years. So I've picked up some, you listen to the orchestra while they play and while you're counting bars. And you learn a lot from that. So eventually I started writing pieces and just melodies that fell into my head, and they came out on the paper and eventually then on the concert. And this is one of them. I was asked by Christian Lindberg to write a concerto for one of his orchestras. He's a conductor and trombone player as well. And I wrote this concerto for this orchestra. And I believe this is the second movement, right?
That's right. That's right. Let's listen.
Thank you.
That's a movement, the second movement to be exact, from a concerto for tuba and orchestra by my guest, Øystein Botsvik, who, Botsvik, I'm trying to catch the Norwegian lilt to limited success. But
oh, it's working fine.
What a fine soloist you are. And as we talk a little further, I'm realizing the layers and layers at which you operate, not only as a recitalist, but as a composer. And I just discovered you also play in jazz ensembles and have had a chance to make music with people like Chick Corea.
That's right. Yeah, I don't play in jazz orchestras regularly anymore, but I used to do that like 10, 15 years ago. And that's when we got the chance to work with Chick Corea on a really interesting project. So we went to Japan, we went to New York and made a recording together.
You have a chance to work with some students here at Western Michigan University during your visit, and it's just a short time. What do you think you can do to help when you have, you know, an hour to work with three kids?
That's a good question. You know, I can't do much myself in order to make them better players. I mean, when you've done many master classes, there are tricks. You can make almost anyone sound better. And you got to make sure that it's not to make yourself look good, because it's very tempting to sort of come across as this magical teacher that makes people sound fantastic in just 10 minutes. The main goal of a masterclass is to give the students something that they can take with them home and that they understand. And this is really important to me, that they can actually use it in their own playing. I can't practice for them, but now at least I have a feeling that these four students that played yesterday, they understood what we were working on and they have the ability to practice it when they get to the practicing room later. That's my main goal. And I think they'll be able to.
Can you diagnose certain issues just through sound?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be done by over phone, actually.
Really?
A lot of it, yeah.
What are some of the common things, like misplacement of the embouchure or...
You can say, I can go over a few of the most common things. For example, if you have trouble making the legatos really smooth, it's very likely that you're pressing hard on your mouthpiece so that the mouthpiece is pressed towards the lips too hard, blocking the vibration. That makes the legato sound more harsh. Same goes for... Like one guy yesterday, he had trouble playing in a large tuba. When he came up to the high register, the articulation became a little prr, 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 like this. And that's a typical sign of also pressing the lips against the mouthpiece too hard. And as soon as we got rid of that, it sounded beautiful. And he knew exactly what to work on later on that. Another thing is, of course, the use of air if you're not breathing correctly. I can almost for sure tell that you're not standing correctly or sitting correctly, because breathing and posture goes really hand in hand.
Standing or sitting.
Yeah.
Both of them. What do you use in a recital
Both, actually.
Like tonight?
Yeah, I tend to play a couple of songs standing up and some sitting down. The traditional way of playing the tuba is, of course, sitting down because of the weight of it. But I have a little bit lighter tuba that makes it possible to stand.
Is it a custom tuba of some kind?
It is. It's made by a company in Germany called the Miraphone Factory. They've been around for 65, 70 years now, and really fine craftsmen. They do everything from scratch. And this instrument that I use has a bell that can be taken off for easier transportation. Again, it's to... get around some of those problems at airports. So
certainly.
Now the whole tuba fits in the normal Samsonite suitcase, which is kind of unbelievable, but it makes life so much easier.
Oh my. How does the bell attach on? Is it threads? Is it threaded, or do you just have a nice fit?
Actually, it's not threaded. It's three screws around the bell, and you tighten them, and then you go on stage. Now, during a concert in Quebec last summer, I forgot to tighten the screws well enough. So when I walked off stage after taking a bow, the bell fell off and rolled along the stage. And I grabbed it just before it jumped into the audience.
So oh, dear.
That was kind of a wild stage show there.
Yeah, it took a little, added a little comedy, I think, too.
Unvoluntarily, but yes.
Again, the concert is tonight at 7:30 p.m. We have looked at a couple of pieces on the program, the lyrical Anitra's Dance by Edvard Grieg, and then a piece you wrote yourself from the Concerto for Tuba. And you'll perform the full piece.
Yeah, the full concerto.
All three movements.
Yeah.
Along with pianist Helen Lucan, who is a wonderful piano accompanist.
Yeah, she has been doing a fantastic job preparing for this concert.
That's right.
Really. And she told me yesterday she really likes the music, and that is such an advantage, you know, if you are working with someone that they are on the same page as you.
Right, right. I'm sure she would, knowing Helen, she would absolutely embrace this. There's a piece next that we can't get a sample of because it has yet to be recorded, but I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah, The New Kid?
Yes.
Yeah, my wife Anna is a composer, a much better one than I am. And she wrote this piece for us festival in the U.S. a few years ago. It's called New Kid. And the reason it's called New Kid is simply because the festival was asking to get the name for the program. And she didn't really come up with a good name in time. So she called all of her new pieces New Kids in the beginning because they're sort of like kids. And then they're sent out into the world to grow up and interact with others. But this one just ended up being called New Kid, so it doesn't have anything to do with kids or anything.
What's the character?
Oh, the character of the piece is, actually I heard a lot of people discuss that after a concert. Is it a happy piece or a sad piece? And that's hard to tell, because in the Swedish tradition, she is Swedish, and this is a typical Swedish tonality. You change between minor and major chords a lot. So impression is that you're not really sure if it's happy or sad, or maybe it's both. So this melancholy that you can hear shine through the whole piece, it's very, very clear.
You said she's a better composer than you are. What is her background as a musician?
Well, she is one of those phenomenal musicians. She plays violin. Oh. That's her main profession. But she's also been playing piano for a long time, and she sings a lot, and she's got an ear that is unbeatable. I mean, she can hear, if you take like all 10 fingers and you just play any type of chord on the piano, bam, like this, she can tell that's that, all the notes that are in that chord right away.
Oh, that takes me back to music class.
Class. Yeah, she's scary.
That's
but it helps, I guess, when you're composing.
A great talent to have, yes. I'm speaking with Øystein Båtsvik, who is going to take the stage this evening at 7:30 p.m. with a program of original and famous music for tuba and piano. Helen Lucan is the accompanist. And we're now on a piece called Ordner Seg or something along that.
Yeah, this piece was given to me almost. I live in a place where the sun is gone during December and January. So when it comes back and shines through my kitchen window one of the first days in February, it's a really big thing. So I was standing there making my breakfast and the sun came in and hit my sandwich. And with the sun that day came this beautiful little melody that was so comforting that I chose to call it It'll Be All Right.
We're listening to music played by my guest, Øystein Båtsvik, who's in town for a concert tonight at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. You are a concert artist who travels frequently and visits many different communities, I would think, some of which are more music-oriented than others, and some which would have a strong band or wind music background. So it must vary quite a lot.
It does. The probably most exotic experience was when I was playing in India with two fantastic Indian players. If there is anyone from India listening, they might know who I'm talking about. One is Dr. Subramaniam on violin, and his wife Kavita Krishnamurti. She is probably the best known Bollywood singer in the country. She has apparently sold more recordings than Michael Jackson. Now, only in India though, but still, I mean, it's totally amazing what she does. Now, when we toured in India, nobody knows what a tuba is. Nobody have ever seen a tuba. So that was very curious. And the fun thing is that to play for people like that, that has absolutely no idea what a tuba is super fun because there is no preconceptions. There is nothing that they associate with a tuba at all.
They don't start marching.
They don't start going oompa, oompa like this, you know? So that was really, really fun. Also playing in South Africa out on the countryside there was really, really interesting as well.
Performing with a singer seems quite natural to me now that I've heard your playing, and we've all been reminded of this singing sound that comes from the tuba.
Yeah.
It's a major aspect of what the instrument can do.
Yeah, I think we're humans and humans sing. And no matter what instrument you do play on, if it's a flute, a violin, or a cello, or even a percussion instrument, you can make them sing. So, and communicate through that. And I think really it all boils down to finding your own voice and utilize that in your music when you're performing.
You seem to be willing to be a bit vulnerable, maybe. These melodies, these pieces you wrote, they're heartfelt.
Yes, they are. And to me, it's not good art unless it's vulnerable, unless there is a fragility to it. And I tried to teach that in masterclasses too, that, you know, it's great to be secure in all of that, but the real excitement, the real thrill happens on the borderline of insecurity, between insecurity and security. Otherwise, it could be incredibly boring listening to somebody that nails all the notes, but doesn't have any kind of, there needs to be security, of course, but also needs to be this, you know, little excitement. Will this work? Where will this take us? You know, stuff like this.
I like singers who allow little imperfections in their voices.
Oh, you remember the Beethoven quote? What he said, I can excuse a wrong note or two, but I cannot excuse lack of passion.
No, I hadn't.
I like that.
Well, here we are at the end of the hour. And again, this has been a great trip for me, even though we didn't leave the studio, a trip through the world of a tuba soloist and learning what you do. Again, the concert for those who want to hear Mr. Båtsvik in concert is tonight at 7:30 p.m. And the program really begins at 7 if you care to enjoy a little interaction with the artist on stage. The program will be about an hour or 75 minutes in length, and the tickets are available at the door. I guess that's all I need to say. Finally, we're going to leave our audience with music of Astor Piazzolla, which has certainly been a favorite composer to adapt in the last 10 or 15 years or so, the wonderful Argentinian composer.
Yeah, he's just such a joy to play. And also, I think he's kind of one of those composers that is a favorite among the audience as well as the musicians.
Yeah.
and it's played on all kinds of instruments, and he really encouraged that himself. So
he played the bandoneon. Yeah,
he did.
Accordion style.
Yeah, he did. Instrument. So we have adapted this for tuba and piano. My piano player Nicholas Sivilev, that plays on this recording, has been very helpful in making these arrangements. And every piano player loves playing them because they're so well written for the piano and also inventive. And finally, it's Piazzolla.
Well, Mr. Boltzvik, thank you so much for coming to WMUK, sharing your music, and all the best on your concert tonight.
Thank you so much.